This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking with Robbie Boydston and Jake Tabor from eduk.com, who stopped by to talk Oregon-Florida State in the Rose Bowl. So let's go ahead and get started, where we'll talk first about injury situations between the two teams. Well, first of all, Robbie and Jake, thank you for joining us. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. It should be a great game, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And Jake.
Looking forward to it.
So first things first, these two teams have obviously been, I think, among the more banged up teams in the country all season, and I think it's remarkable for both teams, for either team to actually be here, given the injury situations that they've had over the course of the season. You know, you can make a case that Oregon's four of their top eight players have been have either been lost for the season or have missed significant time this season, and to be able to get to the Rose Bowl with only one loss at that point is really impressive. It testifies to the depth of that program. And Florida State's been in sort of a similar situation where they came into the year pretty young. This is a young Florida State team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and had some big holes to fill from last year's title team. And then in some of those spots, they lost some real key contributors, and again have had a lot of players miss a lot of games with injuries and have been banged up, especially in the second half of the season. They were really banged up coming down the stretch, and it was really, again, remarkable for them to finish the year unbeaten and to make it to this point. So I guess the first thing to talk about is, as far as we can tell, and you know, it's a little bit difficult because media is obviously not allowed in to see the important parts of either team's practices. But in terms of what we understand, what is the injury situation? We'll start with the Oregon side. What's the injury situation as you understand, and how much will this layoff have, you know, really help the Ducks moving forward?
Well, Jake, I'll let you take that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, the biggest loss, it happened earlier during practices, was when Ifo Ekpere-Olumu went down with a torn ACL.
Yeah, that's a huge loss.
A guy who's kind of been, it was a huge loss. He's been kind of banged up throughout the year. I mean, he's been battling turf toe and foot injuries throughout the season. So that kind of mitigates it a little bit, but I mean, having an All-American go down, I mean, that's definitely something that you would like to not have to deal with. The silver lining for Duck fans is that Chris Cisse, who's been taking his place, has actually, you know, he's played fairly well for a freshman in that position, and he does have game experience against the caliber opponents. I mean, it's not just Wyoming, South Dakota, you know, those games. He's played in conference and has a lot of time there. The offensive line at one point this season was held together by bailing wire and bubble gum, and they found a way to work through it. And you know, I think at this point, I mean, pending the return of Grasso, and from what you told us, he's kind of a 50-50. They could be the strongest the line has been all season long, which certainly helps.
Yeah, and are there any other spots where, you know, there were guys banged up or anything else in terms of that Oregon looks to be significantly healthier coming in? I mean, obviously the offensive line, you know, with Jake Fisher on the outside and Grasso on the inside, you know, those guys are really critical. But where else have they, you know, sort of struggled in with injury over the course of the season that they may be a little fresher coming in?
Well, I think when you look at, you know, the defensive line as well, Eric Armstead had to miss some time this season. And while they were able to, you know, hold everything together, since he's returned and since he's been able to get back and healthy, it seems that front three of Armstead, Balducci, and Buckner have done a great job of really kind of coming together. The chemistry seems to be at the highest it's been since those three have been able to play together. And they've done a lot of pretty solid things over the last month of the season. being able to come together and really make that line a lot more formidable. So I think that's a big thing to key in on when you're looking at the matchup here. Oregon's going to need to get it done up front with that front seven, and to have those guys healthy is a big deal.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's, you know, going back to the Ekpre Olumo injury, I think that, you know, that's obviously a huge injury in this game, given his potential impact as an All-American corner. At the same time, you know, I was impressed by Cisse in the film that I saw on him, and in some respects, I'm actually not so sure that he's all that far behind Ekpre Olumo as a coverage guy down the field. I mean, I felt like he, as you know, in Oregon plays a lot of fire zone. You know, they run a lot of cover three type stuff where you know you've got to be able to turn and run. I felt like he could really do that well, and he's a bigger corner. So you know, in that regard, at least, you know, again, Oregon's got some depth there. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like on tape, the place where Ekpre Olumo's absence is going to be missed the most is actually in run support and in, you know, his tackling ability and aggressiveness underneath, where I felt like he provided a lot to the edge of that defense because of how secure a tackler he was and how physical he is on that defense as a presence. I felt like that was where he's actually going to be the biggest loss. And you know, I don't know what your guys' thoughts on that are, but I'd love to hear them.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Ifo, as far as a run stopper, I mean, if you can't get to the edge and get around the corner, I mean, that really hurts your run game. And you know, in as much of a passing league as the Pac-12 has been over the past several years, I mean, there's a lot of really good running backs in the Pac-12, and you're going to see another one again in Florida State. And you know, the thing is, I mean, having a guy who's able to come up and make those stops in the run game is really, really important. Troy Hill, I mean, he's no one to sneeze at in the run game. I remember against, I believe it was Stanford, he came up in the run game and just dumped Barry Sanders, I think, 3-4 yards behind the line, just a pure form tackle. So John Neal, the defensive backs coach, I mean, he definitely teaches these guys how to cover the run as well as cover the pass. So, you know, but absolutely, you can't escape the absence of Ifo in this game.
Yeah, getting ahead of myself a little bit here. I felt like, actually, again, on tape, one of the things that really stuck out to me about the Oregon defense is how physical they play in the secondary, that they really do come up and hit, and they really tackle well in space. That's something that stuck out to me tremendously about that defense. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, still talking a little bit about injury. But I think I heard one of you, Robbie, was that you? You had something else?
Well, I was just going to mention, you know, you mentioned the how physical they are in the secondary, and even without Ekpre Olumo, they went after a guy like Cisse, you know, having covered recruiting. Cisse was one of the first guys I had a chance to cover when he came to, or when he eventually committed to Oregon, and they liked him because he was a bigger guy. He knew what he was doing, all those points that you touched on, and he's a smart guy as well. But you look at him, and then, you know, you look at Eric Dargan, who's leading the team in tackles. You look at what, you know, Reggie Daniels has been able to contribute, and then, as Jake said, Troy Hill's had a phenomenal season. This is a group that, dating back for a few years now, has always been one that when one guy goes down, it's kind of a reload. It's they got another guy up, that next man up mentality. A few years ago, Ekpre Olumo knew what that was like. You know, you have guys like John Boyette go down, senior leaders and stuff like that, and it was this younger group of guys that eventually fell into, you know, Ifo and the guys who ended up eventually coming up and being big stars for Oregon later on, kind of filling that role as younger guys. So it's going to look like that's going to have to happen again. But I think the timing of it all, when you're looking at injuries, is just, it couldn't be at a worse time, because you don't want to throw out inexperienced guys or guys who aren't ready for the big stage too early.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, Florida State's going to put a lot of receivers out. And the other place that this is a factor, I think, is Florida State plays a lot of 3 and 4 wide receiver sets. And the place where this actually affects them in pass coverage more is against that 3rd and 4th wide receiver, where before it would have been Cisse or potentially moving Ekpre Olumo inside. Because Florida State puts, for example, Rashad Green, their top receiver, on the inside. Particularly, they'll go trips and put him in the number 3 slot, you know, the furthest inside, to try to get advantageous matchups. They do that a bunch. And when you lose your top corner, that means that your number 3 corner is now your number 2, and you know, everybody slides up a spot, which means that those guys on the inside typically are less experienced as well. So I think that's going to be another place where this where that has the potential to hurt a little bit. And I expect to see Florida State try to test those guys inside a little bit on some of that, you know, going to the slot guys and Nick O'Leary at the tight end position and you know, backs out of the backfield to try to test some of those a little bit less experienced replacements, moving up one man, as it were. Now, on the Florida State side, talking about the injury situation, you know, obviously so far the injury situation is different. They haven't lost one of their best players during bowl preparation. In fact, they actually got one of their best players on defense back. And you know, this is something that that has the Florida State camp really excited. And that's that their starting nose tackle, Niall Lawrence Stample, and actually going back to last year they had Timmy Jernigan, who's now starting at nose tackle for the Baltimore Ravens, at nose tackle on last year's team, and he was such a force inside that, you know, that really helped that defense sort of win from the inside out. Losing him, you know, it was really important coming into the season that Niall Lawrence Stample would be sort of an anchor inside. You know, he split time, probably got about 30% of the snaps last year behind Jernigan, split a lot of snaps, and really was expected to step up and be the guy at that spot this year and take the bulk of the snaps there, and played very well through the first 3 weeks and then went down. It was thought for the season against Clemson, and hadn't played since. He went down with a pec injury, which the usual time to being back on the field is about eight months. That's about the average. And he's actually been practicing with the ones the last 3 days of practice, and has had no real issues from what we understand. So that's actually something that I think will affect Florida State pretty significantly defensively, because that's where their defense has been soft. They've had some softness on their defensive line. On the interior, teams have been able to run the football on them. And if there's one thing that you know, you can't let Oregon do, you know, everybody wants to talk about Oregon being a gimmicky offense or whatever, and that's baloney, because, you know, Oregon wants to run the ball down your throats more than anything else. You guys know that as well as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's where having that extra big body, that, you know, 315-pound nose tackle back, and then having his backup then, you know, be able to get his former backup, who probably will still start the game, having that extra extra depth, I think is really critical. There've been a couple other places where they've gotten a lot healthier. I felt going into the Georgia Tech game, those who listen to this podcast on the Florida State side, know full well that going into the Georgia Tech game, I made it very clear that I felt Georgia Tech had a very good chance of beating Florida State, because in part because of the health situation that the Seminoles had at that time. That was a very banged up football team. And it was as exhausted mentally and in every other respect a football team as I've seen in a while, where they really were just hanging on and just trying desperately to make it to the playoff. And I felt like that was a really good Georgia Tech team that had a chance to beat them. And now it just seems like this team is much fresher mentally and also physically. You know, they against Louisville, there were 7 of their 9 scholarship linebackers were out for the second half. There were 6 of the 9 that were out going into that game, and then one more got banged up in the game, and they ended up having a backup safety playing at the linebacker spot through most of that second half. Gives you an illustration of how banged up they've been at linebacker and such, and most of those guys look like they're going to be significantly healthier coming into this particular game. So should be interesting to see how different in particular things look on the defensive side for Florida State coming into this game, where their defense is going to have to be better than it has been.
Well, and you mentioned with getting a healthy nose tackle back too as well, when you're looking at them trying to take advantage of if Grasso doesn't play, that's a huge deal. And Oregon's going to throw different types of running backs at them. You know, obviously Marcus can use his legs, but you're going to have Royce Freeman. There's going to be a lot of Royce Freeman in this game. He's a bigger back, but they've started to use Charles Nelson more and more in the backfield, especially with Thomas Tyner out. Still don't know what's going on with Tyner, if he's going to be able to go. But then you've got him, and then Kenny Bassett's been getting more and more of an opportunity in his final season as a Duck to kind of make a stamp for himself. And then also you've got Byron Marshall, who's the Ducks' leading receiver, but for those who don't remember, he was the Ducks' starting running back for two straight years the last couple of seasons, and then made the transition over. So the Ducks are going to throw all sorts of different things at him, and the healthier Florida State can be, just kind of looking at it from the Florida State side of things, the healthier they can be on that line and with their linebackers, that's going to bode much better for them. As you said, Oregon likes to get things established by running the ball. Marcus puts up a lot of impressive numbers with his arms, but if they can't get anything done on the ground, Oregon becomes a completely different team in the way they execute, and sometimes that's not so much of a good thing. So, that's a big deal for Florida State to get as healthy as they can in that front seven.
Yeah, no doubt. And that actually serves as
kind of reminded.
Go ahead, Jake. Sorry about that.
Oh, I was kind of reminded of the national championship game where, when Oregon played against Auburn, it seemed like that's basically what came to fruition. They weren't able to run the ball and became more of a passing mm-hmm. offense. And, I mean, the crazy thing about that game is you have the top two scoring offenses in the country total what amounted to one of their totals on average. And so, yeah, Oregon, they have to be able to run the ball. They have to be able to maybe move the front line laterally and while keeping them, forcing them to stay home while making them fatigue mentally. Like, to me, that's the big game, is if Oregon can make the defensive line for Florida State mentally fatigue, I think that's going to go a long way in for Oregon if they're going to be successful.
Yeah, and actually, again, that serves, I think, as a great transition as we move then into to talking about the Florida State defense versus the Oregon offense. And, I think that's a really good place to start, because one of the interesting things about this matchup, and this is really a fun matchup in so many ways when you watch the tape and when you're looking at what these two teams try to do, on both sides of the ball, that's an interesting piece in itself, because Florida State all season has been a team that has, as everybody by now knows, it's a team that's fallen behind quite a bit this year. They've taken the best punch of every team they've played. And actually, it's interesting. I don't know that a lot of Oregon folks realize this, but, you hear about people saying, well, they take everybody's best shot. That's actually more true than people realize when it comes to Florida State, because this is the most bizarre season I think I've ever seen from this respect, in that there have been a lot of injuries from Florida State opponents over the course of the year, none of which have actually impacted those teams when they've actually played Florida State. So a good example of that is, I think the best football team that Florida State played all season was Clemson early in the year, when Deshaun Watson was at quarterback and was healthy and they were rolling on offense. And that offense is completely different. That Clemson offense is average at best with Cole Stout at quarterback, a guy who threw six touchdowns, 10 interceptions on the season. That's not a good ratio. You're not going to be able to do much when that's what you've got at the trigger man. But Deshaun Watson's passing numbers are almost identical. If you look at the passer rating and yards per attempt and all that, it's very similar to Marcus Mariota, which is that's impressive. I mean, Mariota has had a tremendous year. And you look at then Deshaun Watson, anybody who's able to put up anywhere close to the galaxy of the numbers that Mariota has put up this season is a good year. And then, they had some great receivers, some great stuff on offense. And then two games after playing Florida State, he went down and basically missed the rest of the season, except for playing about three quarters against South Carolina when he came back and played on a torn ACL. It's just a really remarkable thing. Same thing with Louisville. Their first round draft pick, Devontae Parker, at wide receiver, did not play the first nine games of the year, which is when their two losses actually occurred, other than Florida State. He came back 1 week before Florida State, was fully healthy for Florida State, along with Michael Dyer, the running back, who was injured also for the first, I think, six games. And now he's out for the bowl game. And then they also had their starting quarterback, who missed, I think, three games before Florida State, and then went out for the year, I think, two games before playing or after playing the Seminoles. So it's one of those seasons where they've played a lot of teams that have been actually – It's strange to say this, but they've been better when they've played Florida State than when they went than most of the rest of the season. So they've fallen behind these teams, as everybody knows. And then what's interesting is that the defense has given up points in the first half. They've done all this, and then what you see is this is a team that's used to wearing teams down and basically declaring their supremacy in the late third, early fourth quarter, where they just come out and they say, we're better than you, we're better conditioned than you, we're going to wear you down. And then they're going to play the Oregon offense, and that kind of sounds like the Oregon offense, where sometimes it's taken them a little bit of time in the first quarter to get moving, and then all of a sudden the avalanche comes, and teams get fatigued, and you see this on the tape. Teams that play Oregon, the pace eventually gets to them. They get fatigued, and then they get run out of the stadium. And that, to me, is a really interesting piece of this matchup, is which team actually wears down in this environment, because that's what they both want to do.
Right. Well, you're completely right. I mean, you look at what Florida State was able to do. I went back and did a little research and looking at the final half of that schedule there, and looking at what they were able to do with their second half defense. You know, you only give up 10 points to Notre Dame and Louisville in the second half. You give up 7 to Virginia and Boston College, only 3 to Miami and Florida. Give up 14 to Georgia Tech, but Georgia Tech's a pretty competent offense. You know, they were coming off a win against Georgia the week before, obviously playing in the ACC title game. That's a talented team. But, you know, and at the time you're playing Notre Dame, and they were the number five team in the country, I think.
Number five or six, yeah.
They were up there. That was a tough team. And so, you know, I know they phoned it in kind of the last part of the season after the loss to ASU, but that was a tough team at the time. But you bring up the conditioning point, and that's where I've been most impressed with Florida State this year is, you know, even going back to the NC State game, where they looked dead in the water early in the year and were able largely in part to a big offensive showing in the second half, but they were able to come up with the big defensive stops when they needed to, and they've been able to do that all season long. But then you get to a team like Oregon that prides itself on being better conditioned and being able to outwork any other team out there, and all of a sudden you've got yourself what could possibly be a big matchup problem, because Oregon's a team that's prepared to go pedal to the metal for 60 minutes. And you saw what they were able to do against Michigan State. Michigan State's plan was to come into Austin, wear them down with their physicality, because in the past that had worked with some Oregon teams. You look at what Stanford was able to do with them. You know, they're not exactly the same team, but that physicality was able to get to Oregon, get inside their head, and took them out of a rhythm. And Oregon just didn't let that happen for an extended period of time against Michigan State. They were able to wear down Michigan State. Walking on the field toward the end of that game, you could walk by the Michigan State's, you know, the Spartans bench, and they were gassed.
Yeah, they totally looked gassed on tape.
they were completely gassed, and they were huffing and puffing on the sidelines, and you could tell they were completely tired. So this is an Oregon team, and where it gets trickier is because of all the offensive line injuries as well. There's been so many guys that have gotten so many reps this season that, you know, you don't want it to happen, but if there is an injury, another one, you know, if Brasu can't go and they have to put Hamani Stevens in at center and rotate Doug Brenner in, or, you know, what have you, if a guy goes down at this point in the season, it is next man up for the offensive line, and they should be able to go in there and get the job done. So it'll be interesting to see how Florida State's going to be able to handle a team like Oregon that is built similarly to the way they are. I think honestly also when I'm looking at how you're preparing for each defense for Oregon, what's nice is that Florida State runs a 3-4, which is something that Oregon already runs, so they can run something like that in practice, kind of mimic what Florida State's able to do. And that's an advantage for Florida State as well, something that, you know, it's not getting used to a trickier defense, it's getting used to something that you're already kind of used to playing against.
Yeah, and I'm going to step in there real quick.
I'm really interested to see that.
I'm going to step in there real quick. Also, the other interesting thing is that even though Florida State lists a 3-4 as their base, they've played about 80% of the snaps this season in what amounts to a 4-2-5. So, you know, the only time they're really in their 3-4 alignment is in goal line situations or in short yardage and that sort of thing. Otherwise, they're in a nickel package with Jalen Ramsey as the third corner, who plays what they call the star position, and you know you're familiar with that from Michigan State, who has a similar kind of terminology. But Ramsey's a true cornerback. I mean, he's about 205 pounds, about 6'2", 205, 210, very very long, about a 6'6" wingspan, very long kid. But he ends up being the fifth DB. He's a starting safety in the 3-4, but he's, you know, they're, like I said, they're not in that much. But again, you're right that in terms of a lot of the technique that they're going to be facing up front. Both teams two gap a lot. You know, Oregon's used to facing that in practice. I mean, Oregon's 3-4 is really determinant. They all season, what I've seen is they've wanted, in particular, they've depended on their defensive ends, who at 290 are bigger than the average by a lot. And actually, they've held a size advantage against a lot of the offensive lines that they played up front. They've depended on those guys being able to two gap against other offensive lines, so they're able to see what Florida State does, because Florida State two gaps a lot. And for those who aren't familiar with what that is, you know, it's where you have a defensive lineman who's responsible for essentially lining up head up over the offensive lineman, and he's responsible for the gap on each side of that offensive lineman rather than for the one gap on one side or another. And that frees a gap effectively in the running game if you've got a guy that can do that. Well, they're used to seeing those kinds of guys in practice, and Florida State's used to seeing the same thing. So like you said, familiarity up front, blocking schemes and things like that is going to be pretty significant.
Well, here's the interesting thing for me. I mean, with Oregon, you talked about the way they've gotten out to some slow starts. Where this game is really going to change for me is about midway through the second quarter. That's usually, it seems to be, and I've said it on the EDUC podcast, that seems to be the time when Oregon coaches kind of figure out what the other team is throwing at them. You saw it in the championship game against Arizona when it was, you know, 6-0, and then all of a sudden it was 30-0. You know, it's one of those things. What Oregon does really well, and we've seen it a lot this season, is that they play exceptional with the lead. Yeah. And it's one of those things that the offense, once they get a lead on you, it's kind of one of those things where you have to go punch for punch. And if you can't, you know, you're going to be in trouble. And the thing that concerns me, if I'm a Florida State fan, you know, just from watching the games that I've watched at Florida State, you know, they have fallen behind a lot. And I don't know if they'll be able to go punch for punch, you know, playing from behind with an Oregon offense that has the ability to score seemingly at will at times. And so for me, that would be my concern as a Florida State fan and, you know, looking at that. And seeing, you know, what can they do if they do start to trail this Oregon team?
Yeah, I think that's right. And the reason that they've fallen behind is very simple. You know, they're -3 on turnover margin this season. You know, they were +17 last year, which happens to be what Oregon is this year. So you look at, you know, -3, and most of those have been first half turnovers. You know, you can't turn the football over. That's one thing that's absolutely clear. You cannot turn the football over against Oregon. Or you go from 6-0 to 30-0 very quickly. You know, they do a great job in sudden change and in putting pressure on you after getting good field position. I'm impressed by how aggressively they're able to call without taking a lot of risks. And to me, looking at this side of the football, looking at the Oregon offense versus Florida State defense situation, actually, for me, the thing that the Florida State defense is bound to be most concerned about coming into this. Oregon has done a tremendous job scheming wide receivers wide open on vertical routes all season. So what they've been able to do is they're looking at teams that, you know, or Michigan State runs a, you know, sort of more or less a similar kind of coverage scheme. It's a Nick Saban style match coverage scheme in the secondary. And you know, you look at what they were able to do against Michigan State. They got three verticals that were wide open. I mean, they were talking about nobody within 5 yards of the wide receiver for touchdowns. And that's 21 points. That's the difference in that game against a pretty good secondary with Michigan State. But what they were able to do is they were able to determine how Michigan State was covering a specific formation look and a specific release combination. And then what they do is they'll tag it and they'll put a little bit of a different release on it. They'll rub a guy, the thing that they do that I think for the Florida State secondary has got to be most concerning is the switch concepts that they run. So you take the guy that's on the inside and then he kind of comes in the footsteps of the guy on the outside and they switch spots and he just keeps going vertical. It's sort of like a quick wheel concept. And they're able to do this when teams are playing match or man and aren't switching well. All of a sudden, you get a guy that's wide open, and Mariota's not going to miss all that many of those. And they've had wide open vertical routes so many times this year. You know, I lost count essentially on watching on tape, and that's something that, you know, Florida State, frankly, in the secondary has not done a tremendous job covering over the course of the year. They've, you know, the Notre Dame game where the pick play was rightly called. I mean, it was a good call, but they blew the coverage as well. That was supposed to be a banjo mm-hmm. coverage where, you know, the outside guy stays outside and lets the guy release inside and they switch him off. And he stepped inside. He's not supposed to do that. But that is reflective of some of the stuff that we've seen from the Florida State side in the secondary. And if you make that kind of mistake against Oregon, they'll take it for 60. And, you know, that's, I think, got to be a big, big concern moving in. You know, I think between that, it's that and the ability to stop the inside zone, which is, you know, the bread and butter that really Oregon has run. And they've run more power this year, from what I can tell. But basically being able to stop inside zone and to a lesser extent power O, if they're able to do that, the other thing you've got to worry about is that switch concept and, you know, some of those rub things that they're going to be running on from trips and twins to put your defensive backs in a bind. I think Florida State's got to be very concerned about that tendency, that ability to just make one little tag change and all of a sudden you've got a guy running free.
Yeah, and when you look at, you know, the Oregon receivers, the reason why I think they've been able to be so successful is here. One is the fact that you've got a highly efficient quarterback who does what he can to, you know, not turn the ball over, protects it as much as he possibly can, and is a fairly accurate thrower. But they've gotten a lot of contributions from young guys and guys that just have a lot of size and speed. And I think you're seeing that vertical route, why they're able to get open so much, is I just don't think defenses are really and weren't anticipating it earlier in the year and expecting some of these guys to be as big of a contribution as early as they have been. You look at Devin Allen, Darren Carrington is coming off a year worth of injury, playing Stanford, but then you got Darren Carrington, who's also a redshirt freshman along with Allen, and Stanford being a redshirt sophomore. You got big contributions there and contributions from guys in Carrington and Stanford that are big targets, guys that present matchup problems. And Allen is the fastest kid in the Pac-12 and a kid who could be an Olympic sprinter one day. So you got a lot of speed there. The one thing that Oregon will miss is not having Farrell Brown there. Farrell Brown was another matchup problem for people. He could block as well as he could catch and open up the field. As soon as they were able to factor him into the game plan about, you know, four or five games into the season, he was putting up some big numbers and leading the Ducks in receiving in a few games. And unfortunately, his season ended at Utah with a gruesome leg injury. But, you know, those are big things that Oregon's going to be able to try and exploit. And again, yeah, you said it's going to be a challenge for that secondary. And when you look at the run game, the reason why they've been able to run more power this year is they finally got a back that lives up to kind of that moniker of a power back in Royce Freeman. I don't know if we expected him to burst onto the scene and be their primary back this soon, but that was definitely what the goal was going to be in the first couple of years. And with Thomas Tyner battling injuries and Freeman kind of taking the reins, you know, it's added a new dynamic to the Ducks offense that they haven't really had since LeGarrette Blount was running there. So, and it's definitely something that's helped them get to the point they're at now.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I actually, you know, I think they'll, especially with Lawrence Stample back for Florida State, you know, that's going to be one of the matchups that I'm going to be looking at most closely early in the game. And I actually think Florida State will have more success than most of the teams that Oregon's played, limiting that inside run game and forcing, you know, forcing things wide and forcing Oregon to throw a little bit more when they don't want to throw. And that, you know, that's the thing. If Oregon's throwing because they want to throw, you can forget it. you know, that's, they're going to score a lot of points. But I think they'll have some success there. But I think the counter is that, you know, we haven't seen Mariota run that much this season. And I think that's where in this game, there's no real reason to worry about protecting him the way that they did all season, you know, to make sure he doesn't get dinged up the way that it cost him the Stanford game, arguably last year. Where, you know, he's dinged up going into it. This year they protected him a lot better, even though, you know, he took a beating when the offensive line was patchwork. But I expect to see him run a little bit more in this game. I don't know if you guys, again, if that's something that you're expecting to see, but that's something I'm kind of anticipating, is as FSU limits a little bit more, that I expect to see them go a little bit more read in this game than they've done in the past, you know, some midline read and some things like that to give Mariota a chance to affect the game a little bit more with his legs.
Well, I mean, he's been running. For me, when Mariota runs, it's more of a being a playmaker sort of situation.
Yeah.
I think that he's realized that he has the ability to, you know, hit a fly 35 yards down the field and on the way to the receiver. I think he's come to realize that, and he can make those plays, and it's a team chemistry thing. But, you know, when you look back to that Stanford game, I think it was like a 4th and 12, and he, instead of, you know, trying to make that play, he just made the decision to take off and run in that first drive, which really kind of set the tone for the game. And so for me, you know, him not running as much isn't as much of a concern, because he has been able to throw the ball very well. And him, basically all Mariota has to do is be a threat to run the ball, and he's a problem for defenses.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
And so that's what I see out of him. And it goes back to making an 11-on-11 one of Coach Kelly's original philosophies,
right?
Was if you have to account for every guy on the field, that's an advantage for the offense.
Right.
And
that's,
so I
that's
think if
where
he just has to be.
Go ahead. Keep going.
If he's just a threat to run the ball, if he can show you early that he has the ability to burn you, that's going to open up the offense quite a bit.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, Florida State trying to two-gap a little bit, with especially Eddie Goldman, if Niall Lawrence-Stample is able to give them the snaps that they're expecting, and also Mario Edwards on the edge, that's where you eventually you're trying to regain that numbers advantage by being able to two-gap with a guy or two. And that's going to be the interesting thing up front. I also think, you know, the other thing on the flip side, here that I think is the other interesting thing before we move over to the offensive side of the ball, for Florida State, defensive side for Oregon, is that I do think that the Florida State secondary is by a good bit the best secondary that Oregon will have seen this year. I think you can make a case that all three of Florida State's starting corners would potentially be the best corner on all of the defenses that Oregon has played this year, with the possible exception of Michigan State. You know, who has a potential first round corner. All three of Florida State's corners have been, depending on who you ask, you know, they have anywhere between a first round. You know, Ramsey has been projected as a potential top 10 guy, but he's not eligible this year. But the other two have been projected as real potential first rounders, and you know, potentially as high as mid first round, or maybe slipping into the second, depending on how they test. Although Darby will test extremely well. He's a kid that ran 10.41 in high school in the 100 meters, so, you know, he can move well enough that I'm sure he'll test off the charts. But you know, Williams, it'll be interesting to see how well he tests at his size. But anyway, I think that's another thing where I think Florida State will be able to single some of those receivers a little bit more than maybe Oregon's seen most of this season. Okay, so that's going to wrap our first portion of this discussion. We decided to split this episode into two episodes as a result of what turned out to be a really fun discussion on the other side of the football, which would have just made for too long of a single podcast. So please join us again. We should be putting the second one up tomorrow, where we're going to talk more about the Florida State offense against the Oregon defense and give a little bit of what we think are some keys to the game and some places where each team has some matchup advantages. So definitely don't miss tomorrow's podcast. But for the interim, that's going to do it for us. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks to Robbie and Jake from educk.com for contributing with a lot of wisdom on the Oregon program and what they see in terms of the matchups coming from that side. But this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. As always, if you enjoy what we do, please rate us on iTunes. Invite a friend. We'd appreciate the company. Thanks again. Be with you again tomorrow.
I made this.